Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. This is part two of our weekly Q&A with Layla, and I'm here with Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mudin. We're answering your questions. By the way you get questions to us is email us to radioprogram@aol.com. Email us your question. Try to make it brief and concise, and we will then endeavor to answer it during one of our podcasts. Or if you prefer and you want to pose your question to me live on the air during the airing of the Intelligent Medicine Weekend Show, give us a phone number where you can reach on Saturdays from noon to 2 p.m., and we will then call you and put you on the air with me, and you will be live, and you will become famous, a celebrity, because you'll be on the radio. All right, Layla, this is a question from, this one is from, here, you read it.
Let's see here. Dear Dr. Hoffman, Layla, and staff, be well. Thanks for all the great information via radio and the web. That's all very nice. Need some help for my children who are fussy eaters. I have a 13-year-old daughter taking Twin Lab Daily One caps with no iron, and she sent us the label. Okay. Is this okay for her age? My son is 9. He's taking Nature's Plus Animal Parade Gold Multi-Children's Chewable. I hope they're not the gummies. Okay. However, he's growing tired of this chewable and wonders if he could take regular pills that he can just swallow. Do you know of one for his age that has comparable ingredients to the Animal Parade? This is from Paula.
Okay. So here's Jill. I have to say, I am not the biggest fan of multivitamins for kids, because some of them are chewable, mm-hmm. and like things like vitamin C, when you chew vitamin C on young teeth, you actually damage the enamel. So I'm not that crazy about them.
I grew up on Flintstones, and oftentimes when my mother wasn't looking,
right.
Flintstones chewable vitamins,
you just eat the
I would
bottle.
Go get another Barney Rubble and another Betty Rubble and another, you know, Wilma. Sure.
So
do you remember baby aspirin, how good baby aspirin tasted? Yeah.
Actually, I never got into the baby aspirin, but, yeah. I could say, I mean, who knows how you might have turned out if you didn't have that. Either better or worse, we don't know. But here's a concern that I have. This is an adult multi, all right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a daily one cap, very popular, Twin Lab Daily One Caps with no iron, which is good because not everyone needs iron. And it's very popular because the whole idea of taking everything you need in one cap is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Right? But it's a good one. It's much better than Centrum or one-a-day multivitamins. It's a very rich vitamin.
Mm-hmm.
But that's part of the problem. Now, how do you get all this stuff in one cap when other companies make multis where you have to take 4 or 6?
That's true.
And I'll tell you how. Is they only put 25 milligrams of calcium in there because calcium is the most bulky of all the vitamins and minerals. So what when you're taking all these like 4 or 6 a day, you're getting a lot of calcium. Also, here's the other problem. The second most bulky thing in a vitamin or a multivitamin is magnesium. And there's almost no magnesium in this.
Oh.
So that's how they get it all into one cap.
Uh-huh.
So this is in some ways an unbalanced supplement. Because I think calcium and magnesium are very important for growing children. You know, you're building bone at this age.
Mm-hmm.
And there's only 3% of your daily value of calcium in this, 25 milligrams, which is nothing. And a paltry 2% of your daily magnesium requirement is in there. That's how they get it into one pill. So
okay.
That's not good, number
yeah.
one. Number two, there's a lot of other things. High doses, 200% of your daily value of vitamin A as beta-carotene and retinal palmitate. Well, we know that beta-carotene is a synthetic form of vitamin A, and that's not that great. But I guess if they put mixed carotenoids in there, it would make the thing more expensive, and people wouldn't buy it. So, I don't know, 10,000 of...
10,000 IU a day for a kid?
For a kid.
That's a lot.
So
would call that a lot for an adult,
right.
too.
Oh, now, when it comes to vitamin C, 150 milligrams... That's not very much.
No.
That's not even...
It's not.
That's kind of... 150 milligrams is sort of like to stave off deficiency.
Scurvy.
Yeah, right? So, you know, if you really... you could give kids more, maybe 250 for a kid that age, you know,
mm-hmm.
a couple times a day. That would make more sense if you wanted to fend off colds and really have an effect. The vitamin D, 400 I use, too low.
Oh, that's...
Too low for, even for a child. Because, I mean, even like a very small child can take 1,000 and that would be good. Now, niacin, 500% of the daily value. That's 100 milligrams of niacin for a kid. Why does a kid need 100 milligrams of niacin? I don't know. I don't know why they did that.
I don't know why either, and I'm concerned now because between the amount of niacin with the amount of vitamin A, that's quite a lot for a young liver. Possibly.
Selenium, 200 micrograms. That's
wow.
An adult cancer preventive dosage of selenium.
Should be like 100, 150.
I don't think a kid needs that much, in my opinion.
200?
That's 286% of the daily value that's required. Manganese, 5 micrograms. That's too high. My multi has 2 micrograms for adults. 250% of what you need. Too much for a kid, in my opinion. Manganese actually can be toxic, can actually, at high doses, can contribute to the risk of Parkinson's disease, which is not great.
Yeah.
Which is not great. Chromium, well, there's a nice dose if you're a diabetic, 200 micrograms, but that's probably a little too much for a kid, in my opinion.
Yes, yes.
And there's lutein in there, which is good if you're an older adult trying to fend off macular degeneration. I guess it's not bad for a kid, but... Yeah, it's not much, just 500 micrograms. So in my humble opinion, I don't know. I just don't think that's that custom.
I don't think it's very balanced at all.
Yeah.
Now that we see what's actually
So, for a kid, the most important things for a kid, maybe some calcium if the kid's not drinking milk, some vitamin C, maybe a probiotic, vitamin D at 1,000 or more, omega-3 fatty acids because kids are finicky, they don't eat fish.
Many children are deficient in iron, so I would question the value of giving a child a multi without iron in it.
Yeah. But the way we would prefer to treat that is with dietary iron.
Yes.
I mean, if a lot of 13-year-olds, frankly, they're eating very skimpy. They're looking at the fashion magazines and the teen magazines, and they're vegan vegetarians. They all want to grow up to become veterinarians. They love animals, and they don't want to eat animals. And so they're on very skimpy diets.
Yeah.
But they may not get enough omega-3 from fish, and they may not get enough iron, so maybe a little iron. But, again, always I resist answering questions about what generally should I take, because our whole profession is we see people and they come to us for advice on how to customize their nutrition.
No generalizations, honestly. I think general diet advice, general nutrition advice is not a great idea at all.
Because everyone has their own individual genetics, their own individual needs, the conditions that they're maybe prey to or suffering from, and also there are different life stages, and the different sexes require different things, and so...
And we're finding that out even more recently, different sexes requiring different amounts of varying. So much of the scientific research was done on men.
Right.
So now there's this big question mark about that woman's dose of Ambien. What should it be?
Yes.
For that 60 Minutes interview? That was fascinating.
Exactly. Like, who'd have thunk that women require different medication, like,
honestly,
what a concept.
We've got those pesky hormones, you see.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. Well, getting back to this question about the 9-year-old boy taking, sounds like gummy bear things, I would stay away from that too. The tendency in this country is to color those things with aluminum lakes and things of that nature rather than a beta carotene or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, the artificial colorings are not a great idea.
Right.
Again, an individual workup is the best way to go.
Now, for kids with problems, like a child with ulcerative colitis or a child with attention deficit disorder or autism, we can use targeted nutrition. But we really want to know just to get in there and really treat whatever is the critical deficiency and provide support and overcome some sort of metabolic blockade that might affect the brain or the immune system. You know, children with god-awful conditions, rheumatoid arthritis kids have now, diabetes, we might have to do certain things. But, in general, I'm not a big fan. Not every kid needs to take a multi, and certainly not an adult multi. All right, what else we got?
Let's see. We've got one. This is from Lorraine. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, could you please offer some suggestions on how to heal a leaky gut? Heartfelt thanks.
Okay, so first of all, what is a leaky gut? Some people are thinking of like those those cartoons, you know, when we were kids, you know, people got shot and then they would look down and they'd see like their, you know, stomach contents would come out like, you know, like holes in a rain barrel or something.
Leaky gut, we have tight junctions between the cells of our gut to make it not permeable, and leaky gut happens when those junctions have been compromised, and some undigested food particles or not completely digested food particles can slip on through, enter the bloodstream, and cause immune responses. Leaky gut is caused by a whole lot of things: a bad diet, stress, chronic use of NSAIDs, the non-steroidal anti-inflammatory.
Very important.
Yes.
Yeah, I just saw a young man this morning, and he developed, during his first year of college, ulcerative colitis. And, you know, we asked the usual questions. Did he take a lot of antibiotics? Yes, he took antibiotics. Disrupting the intestinal flora. There was the stress of college. He was training for football and probably drank a lot of Gatorade and, you know, ate a lot of basically the junk that they feed you to bulk you up. And he had, because of his football injuries, he was constantly taking Advil, which could have, and we said, well, we don't know exactly what causes colitis in every instance, but we know that there's kind of a perfect storm that can occur. And this may damage the surface of the intestine and cause leaky gut. By the way, it turns out that the relatives of patients with ulcerative colitis genetically have a higher likelihood of leaky gut abnormalities in intestinal permeability. So we test for it using a test that is not perfect, but it's gives us an indication of who's likely to have this, called a lactulose mannitol challenge. And you drink a liquid and then you urinate over a series of times, and you see if the various sugars that you take in with the drink either come out or are retained. Now, if mannitol doesn't come out, it means that there's malabsorption. It's just not being absorbed properly, because mannitol should come out. But if lactulose shouldn't come out, it should be passed along directly into the stool and it shouldn't come out in the urine. If it gets absorbed, it means that there's tiny holes that are absorbing this rather larger sugar. And then we can ascertain from the ratio of lactulose to mannitol if there's a leaky gut situation or if there's a malabsorption situation. Not a perfect test, but it does give us indication if there's a problem. So what do you do for it?
What do we do for it? Leaky gut, well, first of all, we need to clean up the diet. That also includes eliminating any food allergens. This is very important for leaky gut. We also want to determine if there's candida overgrowth. That can cause a leaky gut. And in turn, it becomes a little bit of a vicious circle, because a candida overgrowth can also not only cause a leaky gut, but cause additional food allergies. We have to look for gluten sensitivity as well. That plays into all of this. Cleaning up the diet, getting rid of stress. Alcohol is another way to get leaky gut, or overuse of alcohol anyway. Supplements like L-glutamine, very, very good. L-glutamine is an amino acid that's the preferred form of feeding by the GI tract. Helps the surface cells heal and repair. Those surface cells slough off every 3 to 4 days, and they turn over. And repair, and L-glutamine helps with that. Taking good quality probiotics, certainly. Getting rid of any other bad bacteria in the gut, we may want to do that first, especially if it's something like candida. Re-inoculating the gut with good bacteria. Lots of antioxidants. Coconut oil is very cooling for the gut.
Certain herbs, maybe like licorice or aloe vera, may have a healing effect in the intestinal tract. So, but, you know, sort of like eliminate the bad influences and promote the good influences, and the gut will heal and normalize. By the way, there's a very, very high concordance between altered intestinal permeability or leaky gut and not inflammatory, but IBS, irritable bowel syndrome, where they say, they look up there and say, everything's fine. But if you were to look under a microscope, or if you were to do a leaky gut test, you'd find that everything is not fine.
Wow.
It looks fine to the gastroenterologist when they look through the scope. They say, oh, you're fine. You have irritable bowel. No, you might have microscopic colitis or leaky gut. So cellular changes. We got one on macular degeneration, right?
I believe so, yes. Dr. Hoffman, this is from Thomas. I have recently heard on the radio from another health program that chelation therapy can be used to treat macular.
Wait, there's another health program besides Intelligent Medicine?
Oops.
I can't believe it. And they're listening to another health program? How could...
Oh, no.
That is so disloyal.
Oh, no. Oh. Chelation therapy can be used to treat macular degeneration. The person that called in had the wet macular degeneration. I've not seen any studies and don't recall you ever speaking of chelation as a treatment for this. Would like me to call in and ask this question, or would you just like to speak to the question, is this a valid treatment?
Okay, so chelation therapy is a therapy that does enhance circulation and mm-hmm. could be helpful for a microcirculatory problem. Mm-hmm.
This is about his brother, a 70-year-old male who's 5'7", 190 pounds, has poor eating and sleep habits.
Well, that's definitely a candidate for chelation, because here's a guy who probably has circulatory problems.
And he has fibromyalgia and has recently taken prednisone. Oof.
Okay, so this is not... this is a person who needs a comprehensive health program, and clearly... The macular degeneration is the tip of the iceberg of all the health problems. He probably is diabetic, based on the weight and the fact he's taking prednisone. Blood sugar issues can accelerate macular degeneration and retinal problems. And so, chelation could be helpful. It does help circulatory disorders. There is a macular degeneration IV, specifically for macular degeneration, that's rich in selenium. We also sometimes put in some taurine and some zinc. We know that those nutrients actually help the macula.
Mm-hmm.
And if given
mm-hmm.
intravenously, you're able to achieve higher levels in parts of the body where circulation may not be optimal. So that is actually some studies have been done on that, showing that that is even a way to treat macular degeneration. It's an IV therapy. It's not per se chelation. It's more a nutrient IV treatment. And we do it on some of our patients at the Hoffman Center. The other thing that would be good is to chase that with glutathione. Intravenous glutathione would be good for the macula if you have macular degeneration.
I think intravenous glutathione is good for a whole lot of things.
A lot of things. But especially when it comes to the nerves
uh-huh.
or, inflammatory conditions or fatigue conditions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Parkinson's disease, certainly.
Yeah.
So, but this is a guy who needs not just an infusion of vitamins. He needs a comprehensive program consisting of diet modification and maybe, looking at his hormones, variety of things.
Mm. Is wet macular degeneration the more common?
No, it's less common.
But
wet means that there's bleeding
mm-hmm.
and hemorrhage, and dry means there's no bleeding or hemorrhage, that there's just a deterioration of the... It turns out that most of the research on nutrition and macular degeneration is based on dry macular degeneration.
Mm-hmm.
So all the studies that show that DHA and zinc and lutein and zeaxanthin and selenium, antioxidants, are helpful or based on dry macular degeneration, which is by far more common. Wet occurs more often in patients with diabetes, and I'm sure this guy's got diabetes. Whether he knows it or not, he's got diabetes.
Yeah.
And also, it is helped probably to a greater extent by high-dose bioflavonoids, things like grapeseed extract, pycnogenol, because those prevent capillary leakage, and that's what's happening with the leakage of blood into the back of the eye. There's leakage, and you want to make that internal membrane of the blood vessel stronger with bioflavonoids.
And take your DHA.
Yep.
Absolutely. For eye health. I believe that's it for
well,
my
that's
questions.
It? Okay, so we've exhausted all our material here. Once again, if you're desirous of getting your questions answered, radioprogram@AOL.com is the place to send us an email. And with that, I will take my leave of you, Layla. Until the next time, this has been Q&A with Layla on Intelligent Medicine. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Thanks for joining us.